So, Dr. Shea, your book is truly comprehensive and covers, you know, the whole field of psychiatric interviewing, and then it comes with the bonus online chapter. So there are five chapters, there are 300 like free pages that you get like in addition when we buy the book on like how to transform anger and confrontation. And on, I really liked the chapter on culturally adaptive interviewing. Yeah,
Oh, great.
we can't really go into all of them, but one of them, if you don't mind, I would like to talk about is the one on the medication interest model.
Sure.
Because, you know, non-adherence to medication has been called one of the biggest problems of psychopharmacology. Because research has shown that people who don't take their medication don't benefit from their medication.
Yeah.
So what your I was just amazed that, you know, you have provided like maybe 50, 60 different specific techniques that
Yeah.
can be used to improve adherence to medication in our patients. And
Yeah.
could you say give us some examples of those?
Yeah, medication interest model, which in the literature now goes by just the acronym MIM. MIM, medication interest model. Yeah, that's something that we put a lot of time in. It's been developing for over 20 some years. And we are really quite hopeful that ultimately researchers are going to validate its effectiveness. Those who are using it in the field certainly have reported it being effective. And in an indirect way, it grew out of a piece of research that was being done by Bob Drake out of Dartmouth in the early 1990s about taking ACT teams, or what we called, or he called, continuous treatment teams, and going out with people who were severely dually diagnosed. So they had out of control schizophrenia or bipolar disorder or schizoaffective disorder, also had concurrent problems with alcohol or street drug abuse or dependence.
Okay.
Also, they had they're very sick and obviously decompensating in many ways. Of course, they had very minimal interest in using medications and were in and out of hospitals all over the place. So we began to develop our particular team an interest in how our case managers, the nurse, myself, what were we saying to people that was increasing this really difficult population for having any interest in taking medications at all, getting them interested in meds? And by the way, the research did show that our particular team, after I think it was about a 4-year time frame when people were on the team, but we took people who, I think less than 5% of people who were on the team originally taking any meds the way they were prescribed. Near the end, I think it was somewhere around their estimates were close to 80% of the people were taking medications as recommended, which in that population, if you think about that, out of control schizophrenia with substance abuse, that's really quite exciting. And there were different aspects of the model that I think contributed to that. But we became particularly interested in how our case managers and myself and the team leader or nurse, how we spoke to patients about medications,
Yeah.
because we began to realize that language was phenomenally important with these patients, and that if patients felt they were being pushed to take medications, they would generally push back. And if instead we could phrase our approaches in ways that the language suggested that we were moving with the patient, in such a way that we were not pushing the med, but we were emphasizing their choice. It was surprising in an almost paradoxical way how much these people eventually became interested in taking medications. One of the first things that we decided was that we wanted to stop using terms ourselves like adherence, compliance, etc., because the terms themselves suggest that the clinician it has more control than they do. We don't make people comply or adhere. And also, it creates almost a language of antagonism. And instead, what we asked ourselves is, what's the bottom line? And the bottom line with our patients is, how interested are they in taking these medications? And so all of a sudden we said, there's our word. We're called medication interest. We're divided into two things. There's medication interest, how much they want to take the medicine. And then once they've decided to take the medicine, okay, what about medication follow-through? Kim Muser coined that term, medication follow-through, meaning that if the person has decided they want to take the medication, what are the things that might get in the way?
Okay.
That could be forgetting, not enough money, et cetera, don't have a car to get to the pharmacy. Both very important, but the second one is of negligible value in focusing on to improve medication adherence, unless the person wants to take the medicine. So they have to make a choice that they want to take the medicine.
Yeah.
So with medication, my gosh, I just used the term adherence. I should slap myself for that because we like to use that term medication interest. But we do find that in training clinicians, by talking about the model this way, it really does decrease their frustration or anger at patients for not even taking medications. So the motivational model behind it is called the choice triad. And what we said and what we truly believe, and I believe this in the deepest part of my soul, very few people who are not taking medications are taking them because they're resistant or oppositional. Some are. There could be people with personality structures that are literally not taking the med because they want to bother me. They want to do whatever they can to bother me. Okay. The vast majority of people, especially with things such as schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, PTSD, major depression, etc., they don't take a medication because they don't believe one of three beliefs. And we call this the choice triad. To take a medication, they'd have to think there's something seriously wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, why would anyone take a medication unless they thought there was something wrong?
Right.
The second thing is they'd have to believe that the medication is a really good way to try to get relief from what is wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. And even if you believe that a medication, there's something really wrong, I want help with it, I think a medication is a possibility, you'd still have to believe ultimately that the pros of taking the medication outweighed the cons.
Right.
What was interesting is I've done probably close to 250 workshops on the medication interest model, sometimes with purely mental health professionals, sometimes with mixtures of MHPs and PCPs, and some, about 100, I think, I forget the exact number, just with PCPs. And I'll come back to that maybe in a little bit, but because I learned a lot from it. But the bottom line of that is I would ask my audience, I'd say, how do you personally take a medicine? Forget your patients. How do you? And they all came up with the same things. They'd have to think there's something wrong. They'd have to think the medicine would work. They'd have to believe the pros outweigh the cons. So one of the things that's so valuable about that is that once the clinician realizes the patient's not taking the medicine for a very logical reason, then it decreases the feeling towards a frustration towards the patient. Instead, it becomes when the clinician, when a psychiatric resident says, if I believed what this patient believes, I myself would not take this medicine. It changes the whole ballgame.
Yeah.
And patients pick up on it.
Yeah.
They don't feel you're pushing the med. And what. So, for instance, if you're recommending, you know, an antipsychotic, a Haldol or whatever, to a patient with a first break paranoid schizophrenia, he's 19. Okay. And, you know, that patient turns to you and says, hey, I don't want your Haldol. I don't need your Haldol. I'm not going to take your Haldol. I'm going to tell you where to put your Haldol. Okay. That is not a resistant patient.
Yeah.
That patient isn't doing that oppositionally because they don't like you. They don't believe there's anything wrong with them.
Yeah.
They really don't. So why in heaven's name should they take a medicine?
Yeah.
It's totally illogical. In fact, not only that, if you don't believe there's something wrong with you, in other words, I don't think there's anything, I don't have the schizophrenia thing, there's nothing wrong with the way I'm seeing the world, and the physician then turns to us and they go, oh, and by the way, if you take this medicine, it might make your tongue dart in and out like a lizard for the rest of your life, and I can't guarantee I can stop that.
Yeah.
I can't even tell you when it would happen. Why would any logical human being take that medicine? If I didn't think there was something wrong and you told me about tardive dyskinesia, it would be weird. It would be odd. Let's just, The point is that we train our clinicians, our residents, our case managers, that if the person is hesitant, figure out which step they're at, because you're going to help transform that step so they can get to the next step. And then the medication interest model has many techniques that can help at each step. Once again, going from the principle, you know, it's one thing for me to say that.
Yeah.
We're going to show you in the chapter in the book what to say. And there's literally a toolbox of maybe 60 or more interviewing techniques that can be utilized. On any given patient, you might use one or two in a session. And you might even decide you only like 10 of them, but you got 10 concrete things. You got nine blades, eight blades, seven blades. So let me give you an example of a technique of this. I think many of us, especially because of time pressures, patients come in doing a med check with a patient. You've been starting them up. Maybe they have a depression. Started them up on an antidepressant, you know, reasonably low dose, maybe moved it up just a little bit. Clearly, in the interview, it's very apparent to you this person is not having a particularly good response to the medication. So obviously I look at my dose, and if my dose is reasonably low, I'm going to, you know, want to raise the dose and see if we can get an impact on the medication. And it's very easy because of time. Now, I can't speak for viewers, but I can speak for myself. Very easy because of time pressures for me to sort of just fairly quickly into the interview, after I hear what their symptoms look like, I see they're not getting relief, suggest, here's what I would suggest. Let's raise this medication, you know, by 10 milligrams. Okay. And on the front, you go, well, there's nothing wrong with that. That's obviously what we do. But here's an interesting thing. I would argue that once again, it's a unique patient and a unique dyad. And so to suggest raising that dose to one type of patient is a very different thing than suggesting that dose raise to another.
Okay.
So the easy one, the patient is on board. They have a friend who's done very well on this medication. You had told them that it was a reasonably low dose. You had alerted them if the dose doesn't work, what you're going to do is recommend raising the dose and hopefully not get side effects. If the side effects outweigh the benefit, then you've changed to a different medicine or whatever. You say that to that patient, and they have no problem with that. Okay? In other words, okay, great, this is what he said he was going to do. And that might be the majority of the patients that, well, to point out, but that might be a large number of the people that you're working with.
Yeah.
But how about a different patient? This person has a major depression. They were hesitant to start on this medication to begin with, and they have developed really significant problems with falling asleep at night. And they have told themselves about a week ago, you saw them a month ago, now you're seeing them for another follow-up. About 2 weeks ago, they had told themselves, I don't like this medicine. I'm on too much of this medicine. This thing is causing me problems. If that's the person I say this to, matter of fact, they say, I think we should just raise this by 10 milligrams. That's an entirely different ballgame for that person. But now let's look even deeper into who the human being is. If you've got a sophisticated person, well-educated, strong ego strength sitting in the room, like if we were one of the patients and someone was prescribing us for our depression, we turn to that physician and say, well, you know what? I'm not really comfortable with that. I'm having problems with my sleep with this medicine. And you know, then they talk it out, and you probably wouldn't. You'd either switch meds, or maybe there's something you could do for your sleep. But we would say something. Boy, a lot of the people that we work with do not have those ego strengths. They do not have that wherewithal. They are hesitant to disagree with a physician or a prescriber or a nurse clinician who's prescribing. So what are those patients left with? Well, they're left with the idea that this guy just said, I'm going to raise this by 10 milligrams, and I already think I'm on way too much of this medication. But what I'm going to do is just sort of sit there and go, okay. And I might say, do you really think this will help me? And I'll go, oh, yeah, no, we're really at a low dose. I think we'd go way up. We have to. They go, okay. And they walk out of there with a script, or we do type up an e-script or whatever. I'll tell you, that script is not going to be filled because they had walked into the room thinking they were on too much. And here's our problem. A lot of times we will never know that that's the patient in the room with us. So here's a very simple tip from the medication interest model. We call it the trapdoor question. And the reason we call it that is that this phenomena of a patient who thinks they're on too much medicine, the psychiatrist prescribes an increase in the dose, totally appropriately. The patient does not have the ego strength to counter that. We so frequently think those people will stop the medication by the next time I see them, okay, certainly not increase the dose, that it's like their medication interest is sort of a trapdoor. Here's how interested they are. If we do that, it's like a trapdoor lever has been pulled. Their medication interest is going to plummet. They're going to discontinue the med. Not only that, it can harm the therapeutic alliance because at this point in time, they're feeling he doesn't get it.
Yeah.
The other thing is it can set it up that they have to lie because the next time we ask them, they might feel ill at ease about the fact they're not taking it, so they'll tell us they're taking it. So it's a mess, this trapdoor phenomenon. Here's a really simple way to avoid this. Is that I try to remind myself every time I'm going to raise a dose of a medication, I owe it to the patient to find out what they think about the current dose. Now, many times our patients will have already told us, but if not, before I recommend raising the dose, or say something like this. You might say it very casually, or say, you know, Mary, I'm just curious. At this point in time, do you think you're on too much, too little, or just the right amount of this medication? And I just lay it out as a continuum like that, and then I watch. Patients who are comfortable will immediately, for the most part, say, oh, no, I'm fine. I think this is a good med. No, anything, any hesitancy by that patient non-verbally, even a, yeah, it's okay. That means it's not okay. And so at that point in time, I could turn to the patient and say, oh, you look a little bit hesitant. And some patients, by the way, just simply say, you know, I'm a little bit concerned about this medicine. Sometimes they raise a side effect I'd not even heard about before, even though I might have asked about it. The most likely one there would be sexual difficulties. I might have alerted them that that's a side effect, but they don't report it to me. And at this point, they say, you know, that thing you were talking about with, you know, I can't get an erection. I think that's happening for me. But the point is that one simple little thing allows me to know where this patient is so that I then can say, if it's a green light, let's raise this medication by 10 milligrams. If there's a hesitancy, I find out what it is. If I can transform the hesitancy, I can recommend raising the medication. If it looks like a no-go, time to collaboratively figure out where to go from there. Simple thing, trapdoor question. Can teach it to a psychiatric resident and you just saw 5 minutes. I could show a video of you using the trapdoor question to that resident. And by the way, you know, there's 60 or more of these techniques. There's like now in the literature, something like 90 of these techniques. Bottom line is you could turn to a group of psych residents and say, we're showing you, we're not saying that these are, you know, you might like these techniques or not. You pick and choose which ones you like. That's once again, no cookbook. But you might say as a faculty, here are 10 of them that we as a faculty personally really like. And maybe, you know, 9 of them were in the book chapter. Maybe one's I don't have in the book chapter, and it's something the faculty just, they like, which is great. I hope they didn't teach me that. Then they simply turn to the resident and they say, 5 weeks from now at the end of this course on pharmacology, we're also talking about how we talk with patients about medication. We're going to do some 3 role plays or OSCEs. You're going to walk into the room. There's going to be a patient role played waiting for you. I'm going to hand you a slip of paper. It's going to have one of the techniques on it, pass, fail. We expect you to use the technique with that patient. There'll be a next patient, we'll hand you a different technique. They will learn these things. Very powerful material. And the other thing that has been fun for me is in giving these workshops, you know, I mean, I've been thinking about interviewing a lot. You know, probably, you know, I think it's safe to say more than most clinicians. And I've been doing this for decades. I'm astounded at the ideas, the good ideas that people use that have just never crossed my mind. And that's why I love this interviewing tip of the month, and I love giving these workshops. I'll give you just an example of a thing. I think a lot of us use sort of a, if we sense a person is really hesitant about starting up on a psychotropic drug, you know, one of the things that I think a lot of us have probably found out is that, you know, sometimes you need to give a little breathing room on this. Of course, we would argue you have to find out why they're hesitant, which step. But leaving that even that aside. So we might turn to the patient and say, we might write a script for them, and we might say something like, well, you know, think about this. If you're interested in starting the medication, go ahead and fill the script and go ahead and start it up. Or you might give them a sample if you have a sample and say, you know, if you are interested, go ahead. I can tell you're hesitant now. These are good techniques, okay? And I use those techniques. But I had a person in a workshop, and she turned to me and said, well, I do an interesting thing. She says, if I really think the person is hesitant to start a medication, and I'm not talking about a person with a psychotic process, or I'm talking about a person with a major DEP or something like that. What I'll do is, you know, I'll acknowledge that, and I'll ask them what their hesitancies are, and then I'll say, you know what? I think what you ought to do is go home and think about this a little bit. Here's a website. By the way, one of your tips from your site that's so good was you gave that excellent website that people could go to.
Medline Plus.
Website. Yeah.
MedlinePlus.gov.
Say that again?
MedlinePlus.gov.
Right. Yeah, that's a great site. But anyway, so you might do that. But she does a really interesting thing. She said, with this particular patient, who I think really hasn't, I don't even give them a script. I don't give them a sample. Because the very fact they are walking out with it, there's a slight element of push to that. Instead, what I do is I tell them, I say, and you know, if a week down the pike or a couple days down the pike or a couple weeks before I see you, you know, 3 weeks from now, if you feel like starting the medication, just give me a call and I'll call the script in for you and you can start it. And this person told me, it's amazing how this works. I mean, she's using it with the most hesitant patients. And she said 80% of those people will call me and say, I'd like to start the script.
So nice. So nice. Putting the ball in their court.
I gotta tell you, in a million years, I never would have thought of that. I have another thing that a clinician said when we were talking about this in a workshop, and I call this the no med paradox. And so he's very similar, but he literally states, and once again, he has to decide who this patient, but someone who's really, really hesitant. He says, you know what? I don't want you to make up your mind today. In fact, I don't even want you to make up your mind between now and the next appointment. Here's a website to go to, talk to some people about it, see what you think. When you come back here next month, what we'll do is if you have an interest in starting it, we'll start her up. And if you don't, we'll see if there's other alternatives. So he literally almost forbids the patient to start the medicine.
Yeah.
And it paradoxically, the important point is that the patient, just like in motivational interviewing, the patient has to bring the motivation. By the way, in the book, in those advanced chapters, I have if there's a viewer who wants to learn more about motivational interviewing, there's a concrete 40-page chapter just on motivational interviewing as an advanced technique. And then the chapter right after is the chapter on the medication interest model. I'll give you one other tip from the men. We prescribe medications that, you know, in the slang, we certainly could say are pretty heavy-duty stuff. They got often large bad side effects, especially some of our antipsychotics. Some of our medications, you know, a side effect is you can die from it. Clozaril would be a good example of that. And so obviously patients may be hesitant, rightfully so, to start on a medication. So I like to use this, I call this personalizing the risk. And this is a MIM technique that I use if I'm prescribing a medication where a side effect could be death, or it just could be a really bad side effect. TD would be a good example of that. But now, if we're suggesting Clozaril to someone, it most likely, unless they've been referred to us as a consultant or something, I mean, we usually have been working with this person for a while. We frequently have tried other medications, and hopefully we've built as good a relationship as we can with this person. And I think we can build, you know, wonderful relationships with people, even people struggling with the psychotic process.
Right.
There is a spot where what I do is, first of all, I'm sharing the frustration, which is another MIM technique, to share the frustration of the failure of the medication or the side effects, and simply say, you know, we're going to look for another medication. This has clearly not relieved the symptoms that you want relief from your schizophrenia. And, you know, I really do share your frustration because we've been working at this now for 2 years, and we want to find a medication that can really help, you know, not just to do another medicine, something that makes you feel better. Okay. So that's one technique, sharing the frustration. But then the next technique, the personalizing the risk. If you and I have that kind of relationship with one of our patients, I think it can be very useful to turn to that patient and just tell the truth. It's got to be the truth. It's got to be genuine. You just turn to the patient. You've explained to them Clozaril. You've talked about cardiotoxicity. You talked about bone marrow aplasia. You made it plain that you could die from this medication. Not likely, especially if we monitor, but it is a sign. I think it's very useful to turn to that patient and just simply say, you know, Jim, we've been struggling with this schizophrenia and finding a good medication for you for, you know, 3 years now. And you know what? I really think this medication might help. Research has shown it is, you know, probably the best medication for helping people when they are not responding to other medications. I've had some really good luck with some of my other patients. I think it's worth the risk that I've been describing, and we will carefully monitor for the risk. I can be totally honest with you. If I was you at this spot in your treatment, I would take this medication. I'd prescribe it for myself. I'd have no problem with that. That's how much I believe it could help you. I think it's a really nice technique.
Right.
You have to believe it, obviously. You know, if you wouldn't take the medicine in this spot, obviously you should. Or you have to wonder why you'd be recommending it if you wouldn't take it that spot.
Right.
But that personalization of using our alliance with this patient, I think it can be very, very powerful in getting people interested. So the medication interest model has, you know, I think something like 70, 80. I forget the exact number now. It's always growing because people send me tips. But it's something that we honestly are hopeful. And We're hopeful that as much as the case approach has become utilized across the country and both and also internationally for eliciting suicidal ideation, we really are hoping that the MIM will become that popular in not only psychiatry. By the way, the MIM is not just for psychiatric drugs. It has been expanded out into all medications.
Right.
In fact, it's quite popular in nursing and medical schools.
Right, because, you know, there's a big problem with people not taking their medication, you know, with hypertension, diabetes, and so on. So I'm really glad, Dr. Shah, that you talked about this. And I hope all our listeners will, you know, when they get your book, will make sure to go online and get these additional. These are like mini books in themselves, like on the MIM, it's a mini book on motivational interviewing. And they will carefully review all the techniques and try them out because, you know, just by improving the medication interest, it's going to be a quantum improvement in the success of psychopharmacology. It's not just the technical knowledge. It's not the technical knowledge only. It's being able to engage our patients in taking the medication. That's very important.
You know,
thank you.
In a chapter, you know, former Surgeon General C. Everett Koop, who unfortunately has passed away, but he was a huge proponent of the MIM. And in the chapter, I use a quote of his where he says, no medication works inside a bottle, period. And so,
so true.
He's so true.
So thank you so much for your work on this.
Oh, thanks a lot. Yeah, I enjoy it a lot. And please, viewers, send tips, anything you've got. We always trying to make the thing better.
Thank you.